I'm very pleased to welcome as our guest this evening, Yuri Kochiyama. She's a living legend. She knows Malcolm X, knew Malcolm X, and Malcolm X's birthday is coming up. It's going to be celebrated on the 19th, and Yuri Kochiyama happens to have the same birthday. And she met and worked with Malcolm in Harlem. She lived in Harlem for 40 years. And Yuri Kochiyama, welcome to Freedom is a Constant Struggle. So good to have you back.
Well, thank you so much, Kayla. It's kind of you to invite me.
Well, it's a joy to have you and an honor. I feel very privileged to even know you. You're such a living legend. But I do want to ask you right off. I should alert my viewers that two books have been written. You wrote your memoir, Passing It On. Excellent. I've read it. And Heartbeat of Struggle, The Revolutionary Life of Yuri Kochiyama, was written by Diane Fugino. And it's a biography. And when I read Diane's book, I learned that there was a Japanese delegation that came to visit you and wanted to meet Malcolm. Will you elaborate on that?
Oh, yes. This was in 1964, about June. So when you think of the year 1964, you know that's only about half a year before Malcolm was assassinated.
Right.
But anyway, these hibakushas, it was a group of 45, and hibakusha means atom bomb victim. They came not just to America, they went on to Europe and all the way to Moscow to speak out against nuclear proliferation.
Right.
And the group had heard the name Malcolm. I don't know exactly how they even thought about Malcolm, because, you know, the American press did not have a very good, I mean, they would not show any kind of a good image of Malcolm. But the Japanese knew that black people admired him and wondered also, however, why America would be afraid of one lone black man. They wanted to know what Malcolm X was like. And so they asked if there was a way of meeting Malcolm and hearing him speak. And that's when he came. We lived in Harlem, and he came to
meet. And that was we, meaning you and your husband and six children, right?
Right, yes. Uh-huh. And people told us, Malcolm's not going to go to your house. He doesn't know you. And it's dangerous for him right now. What made you think that he might come? Well, I said, well, it's true. I'm not sure. I wrote to him. I did not hear from him. But his office called and said they would do whatever they could that he might come. And he did. And our place was jam-packed. Well, we lived in a housing project in Harlem, and I wasn't sure he was going to come, so I didn't want to advertise it too much and have people come, and then they'll wonder what happened that he didn't come. But a lot of people showed. Our house was jam-packed, and Malcolm did come, and we were all so surprised and just so tickled. People were really more amazed that he would take the chance of coming to a strange home of people he didn't even know anything about, when there were so many rumors that something might happen to Malcolm. And when he did come, of course the people were just so excited. Everybody wanted to shake his hand. They didn't know if he would shake the hands of white people or what, but Malcolm just surprised everyone. He was so warm to everyone, no matter what color, and people were just astounded that Malcolm has that wonderful way. You could help me on some adjective. You know, Malcolm,
he had charisma.
Charisma, that's
right.
The word.
Yes.
He has so
really
much
did.
Charisma.
Right.
And yet, he's so down to earth. Yeah.
Exactly.
And he shook hands with everybody, regardless of what color, black or white or Latino, Asian. And people couldn't believe that this is the Malcolm X they've read about in American newspapers.
Who's always portrayed as a hater and
right.
hateful and all that.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk about, you had already met Malcolm before he came to the house.
Right.
And you did work with him, I believe.
Well, no, I was just one of thousands of, you know, followers.
Oh, yeah. I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things that I wanted you to talk about a little bit about was you were mentioning earlier that he wasn't just a black man, he was a black experience.
Right.
Will
oh,
you
yes.
talk about that a little
yes.
bit?
Yes, I would like to quote that. I don't know who wrote it, but I think it's beautiful that it just fits him, that Malcolm was not just a black man, he was the black experience. He was bathed in blackness, and yet he repudiated his slave name and just added an X, the unknown, the possibility of what might be, the reality of what he became. And I think that's so beautiful, and I'm sorry I don't know who the author is.
Right. Well, he did change his name to Alhaj Malik El-Shabazz.
Yes. Right.
And Alhaj, I believe, indicates that you've made the pilgrimage to Mecca.
Right.
And when he did go to Mecca, was it in 64?
Yes.
Talk about how that changed him a little bit.
Yes. That certainly did change him, but I want to also credit Malcolm's sister, Ella Collins, who made an influence in Malcolm's life because she wanted Malcolm to grow up as a possible leader of his people. And Malcolm, almost like he knew what was in store for him, he just had it inside of him, a very deep love for his people, and he wanted to know as much of history of Africans and black Americans here, because one day he wanted to be able to share all that he would learn. And I think with the question, however, you asked was
basically when he came back from his pilgrimage to Mecca, he had a different outlook. For example, when we were talking earlier, we talked about how he was very hostile toward whites in his black nationalist period.
Right.
And the beauty of Malcolm was how he kept growing and changing.
Yes.
From when he was a hustler and a pimp in Harlem.
Right.
And in Detroit, he was known as Detroit Red.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he was imprisoned for 9 years during which he took the he studied hard, became a Muslim, copied every word in the dictionary, became very, very articulate.
Right.
And well-read.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came out, that's how he became so popular so right away, because he was so well-spoken and so
mm-hmm.
Able to capture an audience.
Right, and that's why the U.S. government began to see him as a threat, because Malcolm's name went out all over, and of course, Malcolm did actually go to Africa, to about 11 countries, I think.
Right, Tanzania, Ghana, Egypt.
Yes.
Yeah.
He met all the most progressive leaders of
right,
Africa.
Right, he met heads of state, yeah.
Right. Uh-huh.
Right.
And
even met Castro in Cuba.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, he did. And he, the name Vicky Garvin, I hope, is familiar to people. She is almost like a woman, Malcolm X, but she perhaps is not so well known because she lives so much of her life in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And in 1964, when Malcolm went to Ghana, she's the one who introduced Malcolm to the international community. And people were very, very impressed, especially the Chinese ambassador. And the Chinese ambassador practically begged Malcolm, please come to China. They have not met many black leaders in China.
Right.
But Malcolm felt he couldn't because he had so many commitments he had already made.
Uh-huh.
And so he asked if Vicky Garvin could go to China for
right.
him. And she did. And at first, Vicky didn't know how long she would stay. But she said, okay, she would go for Malcolm. And she went there, and people thought, oh, she may stay a week or two. She stayed 10 years.
Wow.
Yes.
In the People's Republic of China.
Yes.
During what period? What, in the 70s?
In the 60s and 70s.
60s and 70s.
Yes.
All right.
It's sad that activists don't know her name because I think she did so much of her work in Africa.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
In the Middle East.
Well,
she died in Queens, you know, in New York, but she was quite old then, and it's sad that people are not aware, and I hope someone like you, as you've been teaching all of us, will teach not just black people, but everybody about the life of Vicky Garvin, too.
Yes, well, I'll have to do some research.
Yes,
have to take that
there
on.
There hasn't been enough about her.
Right, yeah,
yes.
She sounds fascinating.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, getting back to Malcolm, and we're speaking with Yuri Kochiyama, who was also, by the way, present when Malcolm X was assassinated in the Audubon Ballroom, February 21st, I believe, 1965.
Right.
And Yuri was rushed to him and literally cradled his head in her lap as he was dying. And he was a tremendous loss to our struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that China wanted Malcolm to come because eventually the Black Panther Party members
yes.
went. A
right.
delegation, Huey uh-huh. and Emory Douglas and Huey Newton and some others were received by Zhou Enlai
right.
in China.
Uh-huh.
And that was quite an event.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But, of course, the Black Panther Party was Malcolm X all the way, taking
yes.
him.
Oh, I think every black organization,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yes.
Was influenced by Malcolm.
We were very much
whether
influenced.
It was,
yes.
Whether it was SNCC or what's the other group, same
yes.
time as SNCC.
The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee,
yeah.
SNCC
uh-huh.
and...
There was even
RAM,
Revolutionary
Action Movement,
which
right.
is Muhammad Ahmed's
right.
group. And actually, Malcolm was a part of it, but they couldn't let anyone know. I mean, you know, the FBI, CIA were just trailing Malcolm
oh,
everywhere.
Yeah.
You
oh,
know.
Yeah. Because Malcolm was not a capitalist.
No.
He said, you show me a capitalist, I'll show you a bloodsucker.
Right. yes. And as although the white press was very, very unkind to Malcolm, Malcolm said, I am an extremist, and I am not ashamed of it.
Right.
The conditions that my people suffered were...
Extreme.
Was the, you know, were
extreme
very...
Extreme poverty, racism, yes.
Right. That... that
exploitation.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I remember.
And so that modern, moderate medicine could not cure American racism.
And, yes. I mean, you couldn't cure extremism with moderate medicine, right?
Right. And I like the way he always made these quotes. One was, if cat had kittens in the oven, they would not be biscuits. And he would follow it up with, I was born in America, but I'm not an American. I am a victim of America.
And he was
very clear. And that's why, as a leader at that time, he was different from the many, many, many other black leaders.
Absolutely.
They never went so far as to say some of the things he did.
No, no.
But he really educated,
right,
not just black people, but it opened the eyes and hearts of people who for the first time, started to see America for what America was.
Right. Mm. And as I understand it, Yuri, he sent you postcards from various places that he was traveling?
Oh, yes. From,
tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think he sent 11 from 9 different countries. Kenya, Nigeria, Egypt.
Did you save them?
What?
Do you still have them? Oh, yes.
Fantastic. I'll keep them forever and pass
right.
them down to my grands.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
And Malcolm had such a way with people, I think because he was so genuine.
And yes, he was.
That's why
he was our
people
black
just
prince.
Really loved Malcolm.
Yes.
And I don't think there's any other leader, national leader, that had that kind of love bestowed on them.
No. I remember I was living in New York City when the funeral took place, but I was still, semi-conscious. I was just kind of waking up, still in my 20s. And I remember the funeral in Harlem, and it was huge. The streets were packed. And, of course, Ozzie Davis gave the eulogy, which was
beautiful.
If you haven't heard that, you should look it up. You should Google that.
Yes.
Ozzie Davis' eulogy to Malcolm X was just incredible.
Yes, and people still recite it.
Oh, yes.
They've memorized it. It'll live.
Mm-hmm. And, when he came back from Mecca also, one of the problems I have with a lot of our more narrow nationalist brothers and sisters is that they tend to quote Malcolm, early Malcolm.
Oh, yes.
And they refuse to acknowledge changed Malcolm. And it's almost as bad as portraying him as a hustler and a pimp.
Yeah.
Because, and he changed from that. He changed from being a narrow nationalist. He became an internationalist. And almost no sooner than he became an internationalist, they assassinated him.
Right. Because
that's when he became a threat.
Right. With so many progressive Africans. And United States knew that Malcolm made an impact in Africa. So Malcolm became a threat to the U.S.
Oh, absolutely.
But one of the people who affected Malcolm in a very good way were the Algerians. This Algerian went up to Malcolm and said, I'm an Algerian, and our people were born here, we lived it, but we look white to some people.
North Africans, right.
Yeah, North Africans.
Yeah.
And so he said, so how does that figure with you? What do you see us as? But Malcolm listened very carefully, and then he said, yes, you are as African as any other African who is darker. And he said, I'm glad you came and told me that yourself. He said, there are things that I have to learn and change. And so that was a good example. Mm-hmm. Malcolm did change in many ways.
even, he was always growing and developing and changing.
And even some things he said he even was sorry for. Benjamin Goodman was one of... Oh, we have to wrap up.
Yeah, we do have to wrap up.
I'm sorry, William, what shall we wrap up on?
Oh, it's okay, I don't want you to get nervous, but finish what you were saying. We got another 30 seconds.
I forgot what I was saying.
We were talking about Malcolm changing from his attitude toward whites.
Right, and especially listen to this Algerian.
Right.
But also, Malcolm told Brother Benjamin that he was even sorry that he answer so rudely to the white girl who came to the restaurant,
right.
You know, and
yes.
said, "What can I do for you?" And he said, "Nothing." Because
right.
he said he believes in treating everybody with, you know, as
a human
kind,
being.
Yes, as human
right.
being.
And that's what he did. He took it to a higher level,
right.
to the human rights level, not
right.
just civil rights. We are
Malcolm
completely
said,
out of time. Uh-huh. Yuri Kochiyama, thank you so much.